So bells were calling people to church, accentuating particular parts of the services, accompanying Christians home from church, which, by the way, was a real problem. By the way, it was one of the reasons for the destruction of a lot of the bells during the early Soviet period. Lenin really hated church bells because on great feast days after the liturgy they would ring, you know, sometimes like for an hour or so or more. As you know, on Pascha they rang unceasingly, like for the first few days of Pascha. The only exception would be for the divine services themselves. When there was no service on the first and second day of Pascha, or even all of Bright Week in theory, the bells would ring unceasingly. And everyone, people would take turns in doing that. And one of the interesting byproducts of that was, is that, you know, I think what we often keep Holy Week with such reverence, you know, and then Bright Week comes in and like somehow, I don't know, that's lost. But you know, in that day with the bells, that wasn't possible. Because in towns, when you had hundreds and hundreds of bells, you couldn't have conversations, really, even on the street. All that you could do is when you could meet somebody on the street, you could hug and kiss them and say, Christos vos grace, shout, and they would shout back, Boistina vos grace, and it would be the sound of the bells telling you that this is, that Bright Week was a time set apart and consecrated to total joy, that in the same way, not less than Holy Week was, but in the kind of exuberant thing, but not in a worldly way. So if you can imagine what a wonderful experience that must have been. So above all, as we said, not above all, excuse me. One of the other functions of bells, of course, were informing parishioners who were not attending church about what occurred there. And that was true, you know, in the West as well, when the Angelus and so on was rung and so on, that people in working in the fields, when they'd hear the Angelus, I don't remember the specific prayer. Do you know them, how it works with the Angelus? What do you say?
I don't.
There's a specific verse to say about the angel Gabriel, and then the recitation of Hail Mary and so on, and prayers to the Mother of God, and all of that would... So that when you would hear those signals, even if you had to work on that day or whatever, that you would know, you just take a moment to stop and you know that it's a kind of prayer break and really important a part of culture. I grew up in a town where it was that way. There were four Catholic churches within just a few blocks where I lived, and they would always ring the Angelus at 6 a.m., and at noon and 6 p.m. Yeah?
In France, at noon, the Roman bells ring for the Annunciation.
Uh-huh. And it was really neat in my neighborhood because I could hear all four churches simultaneously ring their bells and you know, every day at those parts. And it was a very special kind of thing. And then in recent times, they were forced to eliminate the 6 a.m. one. I guess, you know, somehow, but anyhow. Yeah.
I would say we went to Croatia last summer.
Uh-huh.
It's exactly as you're saying, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
In a touristic town, the bells would be ringing.
Yes, see? So above all, they were a constant public reminder of the Magnalia Dei, the great things which God has done for us. Yeah.
I just have a question. You said that during Bright Week, the bells are ringing all the time.
Except for during services.
Okay, but, you know, I mean, for I think many of us, you know, we all have this journey to Pascha, and we're going on and on and on, and the intensity increases, and we get into Holy Week, and it's almost exhausting, and then all of a sudden Bright Week comes in, and it's bang, nothing. And what a letdown. And I'm wondering if that never developed, because the bells were always ringing, so no real kind of, you know, group of services to come from the resurrection never developed, perhaps, at that time. Is that possible?
No, in other words, the bells did not ring during the... In other words, because during Bright Week, you know, we'd have the sung hours and vespers, matins, and liturgy every day, in a but when the service was not going on, the bells were ringing so that you would be constantly reminded whatever you're doing. Even if you're sitting at home and eating and drinking, you could hear that reminding you why you're sitting there eating and drinking. In other words, it was precisely... was certainly not a replacement for the services, but a way to extend them. In other words, so from service to service, there was a continuum of the celebration. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it filled that. Yeah. So
mm-hmm.
It filled that.
Solemnizing, solemnizing the period between the services.
Yeah. Right, so you knew you were in a very protected time, because you know it's still. I don't want to talk too much here, but so let me know when it's time to shut up. Okay, I guess I'll wait for the bell to ring, huh? So when I hear the Blagoveste for Vespers, I'll just close the book and that's it. But right, you knew that you were in a protected period of time, which Bright Week is. We forget. For example, you can't have you don't serve panihidas during Bright Week. You can bury somebody, but not panihidas. That's why we have Radhanitsa after St. Thomas Sunday. You can't, weddings aren't performed during Bright Week. Not until after St. Thomas. It's just as protected as Holy Week is. And I think we've lost that, don't you think? And it's kind of sad, especially because all the build up to that of all of Great Lent and Holy Week, and then somehow it's like what we've done, what the West has done with Christmas, you know. Like you have all this, you know, it begins like after Halloween and then ends on the morning of December 25th, or actually in the middle of the night on December 24th. We've kind of lost that. So the church bell also is a symbol with many meanings. Bells are associated, I like this because I'm a trumpet player, they're associated with trumpets. In other words, they are heralds. Heralds from heaven to earth. We know that image, of course, of even the Archangel Gabriel, which St. Paul quotes in the letter to the Thessalonians, with the trumpet of God. Bells even have an eschatological function. Their clang reminds believers of angels' trumpets, and because they're made of bronze and have a relationship with that. And their clang reminds believers of angels' trumpets, which will suddenly stop the earth's history of mankind as we know it. St. Paul says it, and with the trumpet of God. And they will call the living and deceased ones to God's judgment seat. You know, the old believers have a legend, you know, that the Tsar Kolokol, which is in the Kremlin, that's cracked, is never ring. They've always had a legend that at the second coming of Christ, the Tsar Kolokol, it's one time, its great moment will be to usher in, as the Blagoveste, the close of the age and the second coming of Christ. It's kind of a wonderful thought. And so it's been waiting all this while for that. But more than anything else, the bell sound is tied together, and this comes from the Psalms, with the voice of God. The voice of God summons people. The voice of God is the voice of our conscience. The voice of God is a call to kindness in our hearts. The voice of God is a call to repentance, changing our lives. And there are many legends describing confirmed, and this is very fascinating, and non-confirmed stories about how the sound of church bells has greatly affected the soul and the consciousness of even hardened sinners and people who were in great despair. There are stories of how it stopped murderers from committing sins. There are stories of how hearing the Trezvan stopped people from committing suicide. There are stories of how the bells have brought greedy and hard-hearted people to repentance. And so bell casting and bell ringing aren't just part of rubrics or externals, but it's a really sacred art. And when we talk about peal as an art, we should emphasize its most liberal and artistic form, again, what we call the trezvon, or triple peal. And that's the sequential strikes on all or many bells. We'll give some samples. And this most technically difficult but joyful peal serves as an excellent canvas for the creativity of bell ringers. In a common tempo, under the metronome of the largest bell, the other bells produce a variety of rhythmical patterns. And each new chord opens a new spectrum, opens a new accord of various voices. And so the voices in a trezvon are similar to a chorus. And they're divided into parts, each having its own function. And the largest bell is less frequent, and it determines the tempo, and it sets its pulse. And the middle bells, what we call zazvonlia, or the altos, are applied in a more frequent pattern, and they lead melody and intonation parts. And the small bells perform the most difficult rhythmic patterns, the trill. And the trill is the embellishment of the whole trezvon, and the hardest thing to learn to ring, by the way. But before we even get into that section, I want to give you a sample. Now, this is a ring which is a very traditional ring from the Optina monastery. Most of you probably are familiar with the Optina elders, but they're also, Optina is very famous for bell ringers. Tragically, too, if you, many of you recall that right after the collapse of the Soviet Union on Pascha night, the bell ringers at Optina were murdered brutally ringing the Paschal Trezvon. It's really a horrible, horrible scene. And every year that's commemorated at Optina. But this is the Optina ring from the bells in San Anselmo. I want you to hear those three things we talked about. The largest bell, which is determining the tempo. You'll hear the altos, and then finally the small bells doing the trill. I hope this works.